Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Digital Marketing Agency Builders Podcast. In this show, we discuss the rapidly advancing digital marketing industry and how to grow a profitable marketing agency with some of the best minds in the space. Since 2015, Tyler Narducci has been building and scaling his own digital agency, helping businesses grow and market their services and products through online advertising. Now, he's helping other startup digital agencies launch and scale rapidly to six figures with the Done For You Agency program. If you are interested in taking your agency to the next level and skip all those painful mistakes most have to make by learning directly from those killing it in the digital agency space, then apply now at dfy-agency-program.com/scale. That's dfy-agency-program.com/scale. There will be a clickable link in the podcast show notes below. Now, let's dive into today's episode.
All right, welcome everybody to the next episode of the Digital Marketing Agency Builders Podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Narducci, and today I have with me Rich Webster. Rich is a designer, agency owner, and entrepreneur. From all-nighters, burnout, to 70-hour weeks, he's been there. But today, he spends less than 20 hours a week running two multi-six-figure businesses. Last year, his design agency had its best year ever and brought in over $500,000, while he worked just 10 to 15 hours a week. His work has appeared in the New York Times, MSNBC, CNN, and more. He has also worked with celebrities such as Baron Davis, Chance the Rapper, Larry King, Bernie Sanders, and Carly Fiorina. Now his focus is teaching people how they can scale their businesses to new heights without working more hours. Rich, thank you so much for being on the show.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Love it. Let's go ahead and dive right in. So first, I gave a little bit of background for our listeners in your intro, but can you just kind of talk to us a little bit more about how you got started in the agency space?
Yeah, totally. So, you know, it was great. You provided me some of these questions. I was going back, and it's always funny when I go back. And the first year that I started my business, which was, I think I was incorporated in 2013. So it's been a decade. And that first year, I made on my tax return, I made $10,672, which for the United States, you know, you basically would make more money working, you know, at McDonald's full time or something. I was not an overnight, you know, I didn't wake up with all these skills. And it's funny looking back on it, I really think about like the first 5 years of my career in retrospect, I had no idea what I was doing. I was a designer. I'm self-taught. I didn't go to school for design, but that is kind of the niche that I fell into. And I didn't have a strategy. I kind of just took work as it came in. I never really had any plan, and I just did work as it appears. And fortunately, if you just keep showing up and doing the work, what happens if you work for 5-6 years? Eventually, I got to the point where I did hit my first six-figure year on my tax return. And at that point, I hit a point that I think probably many people that listen to this podcast struggle with, which is where I was 100% maxed out. You know, I was working 60, 70-hour weeks, and I felt like I was really maxed out on time. There was just no more time for me to do anything, and I was maxed out on money. Because of that time bottleneck, I felt like I couldn't possibly bring in anymore. And even though I had, you know, quote unquote made it, you know, I got hit the six figure mark that for so many people is like the first sign that like, oh my God, I've arrived. I just was like, I couldn't see a path forward. And, you know, I'd work these long days and work on the weekends, and I would just look back on my day and really feel like I did nothing. Like I got nothing important done because I was doing everything myself and I didn't have any systems in place. It was just like, you know, meeting to meeting, phone call to phone call, client emergency, putting out fires, getting distracted. And it was kind of like rock bottom for me. And believe it or not, I was on vacation and I picked up a book, which probably many of your readers are familiar with, called The 4-Hour Workweek. And that was kind of what like shifted my entire mindset on what is possible in terms of having your own business and designing it the way that you want it to. And that really sent me down, you know, this long journey of reading a ton of business books, you know, investing in coaching, courses, learned a ton. And I ended up through a lot of trial and error and a lot of failure coming up with this process for designing a business around my life instead of the other way around. And the way it looks now, when it's all said and done, if you just hop in the time machine and skip all the learning and trial and error, is, you know, I run this agency. It brings in about $500,000 a year, and it takes me 10 hours a week to run. And that's where I was and where I am now. And we can fill in the gaps however you want.
I love it. I think it's important to point out that your first year, you said you made like $13,000 total.
$10,000.
Okay. This is a critical point I think we should make, is this is where like 90% of people would throw in the towel at that point in entrepreneurship, is, you know, they put everything they have into it and it doesn't turn into an instant success. And they're like, well, it doesn't work. And they close the book. And, you know, everyone else that has made it has gotten lucky, or they were given it, it was handed to them, or, you know, whatever excuses they make in their own mind, and they don't keep at it. And then they don't end up in that second year, that third year, and they don't end up achieving that, which is really sad to think. Yep. But I think it's really, really prevalent. And it's something that needs to be said a lot more, is that, you know, a lot of successful people, most successful people, were not just handed it. They had to work for it, and they had to stay consistent to get there. So getting, you know, hearing that from someone who is successful, that look, this is the reality oftentimes in your first year or in your first 6 months or whatever it is, that, you know, it's not going to be a smashing success right out the gate, like a lot of, you know, gurus or whatever people online kind of portray it as. You have to work at it and you have to be consistent, and it does eventually pay off. How long were you working at it before you got to that point where you're like, you said, okay, now I think I made it?
Yeah, I need to just put together a document. I always end up having to go back and refer to old tax returns so I can remember what was going on back then. I need to just do a spreadsheet that has how much I earned every year, because I think that would be helpful for me. So yeah, from zero to six figures, it took me 5 years. And wow. Yeah. And
so many people would give up, like so 100%. Many people,
100%.
Like 99.9% of people would not have made it. Why? Actually, better question. Why didn't you give up?
Honestly, I have no idea. Well, okay. I will give you one reason. As you can probably tell, or maybe your listeners will start to understand from listening to me talk, is one of my core values is freedom and being able to control my own schedule and be my own boss. And despite the fact that, like, sure, I was not making as much money at that point as I maybe could have in regular employment, I loved the fact that I was my own boss. And, you know, I always said that, you know, I would work two times as many hours as long as I could be my own boss. And, you know, that's what I got eventually. I figured out how to fix it later. But I mean, that was the one thing that was keeping me going, was like, at least I was in control of my life, you know? And for some people, a job is totally cool. We need those people, right? There are people that want to work within the structures of a job and have, you know, well-defined responsibilities and show up, do a great job and get paid. That's important. But for me, freedom and being able to kind of be my own boss has always been one of the most important things.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I remember specifically in 2015 when I had my last full-time job and I was building my agency on the side, and I was about to go to work, and I was sitting there. First off, I'm just not an early riser. I never have been my entire life. Not before, not today. Like, I'm not a 6 a.m. jump out of bed, let's, you know, hit it crazy morning routine kind of guy. Even though, and I've even tried to force that. And like 9 to 5s, you don't have a choice. You have to get up and get ready and get out the door and get to the office at, you know, whatever 8 or 9, whatever they want you to be. And I remember just like feeling the most miserable in those moments of that like forced morning that I did not want to be, and sitting in my car with dread. Like my refillable dread, existential dread. And then like sitting in the car with my refillable like 7-Eleven, like, what is it? Coffee mug. And just sitting there. And I just remember like banging my head on my steering wheel. I'm like, this is it, man. I got through college. I have my degree and I have my full-time job. And now this is on repeat until 65. Oh my God. 100%. And like, I just like deathly feeling.
That's wild. You just unlocked a memory for me that I forgot. What in college, one year, I had an internship where it was basically like a 9-to-5 job simulator. I was working for a company. I showed up there. I drove to work. I wore, you know, a shirt and tie. And I forgot that like really was a wake up call. It's like, oh my God, like this could be
They're trying to get
forever.
You excited. They're trying to get you excited and ready. And you're like, oh my God, this is horrible.
Yeah. I'm like, I'll pass. Thank you. Yeah. That's.
Yeah. And the worst part was like, it was an entry level job. So I was making like $40,000 a year. Like it was like nothing. So I'm miserable and broke. And I'm like, this is
great combination.
Terrible. like I got to fix this. And that's what, you know, really started pushing me toward the same thing as you, diving into, you know, courses and coaching and business books and everything that I could absorb online for free to learn, you know, how I could kind of take control. And, you know, eventually you build up enough momentum to be able to replace that 9-to-5. For some, it happens faster than others, but the key in achieving that, whether it happens fast or slow, is being consistent with it and not giving up. And so many people give up after just a few months, definitely not 5 years. Like you have some massive staying power.
I don't know. I think I had the benefit of not, not knowing. I think my ignorance was helpful back then. You know, you have to realize 2013 was an entirely different, even though it was only 10 years ago, it was an entirely different landscape. I mean, the amount of information that's available online now and resources that are available, like it was there, but it was just not the same. You know, there was a lack of quality of information. There's very little of it. It was hard to figure out where to get it. And as a result, like you could go years just doing your own thing and not even understand that there's another path.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, people don't really want you to find that path either. Like you have to really like work for it on it to, you know, carve your own path. Cause the way that, you know, United States society is kind of built is like, go to school, you have to go to college to get a job. And then there's even like sub layers of that. Like you need to go to honors. You need to go to honors classes in school. You should be taking AP courses. You should be, you know, trying to get into a better school, aka more expensive school than a less expensive school, because that's going to get you a better job and that's going to look better. So you have like millions of people drowning in student debt so that they can get a good job on the other end. And I mean, every one of my friends that I've ever asked has asked, have you ever been asked for your degree? Or have you ever been asked where you went to school? Or have you ever been asked, did you go to AP or honors?
So I did most of that stuff. I was in the honors classes, the AP classes. I went to a good college. I actually went to Georgetown University. And I've got a $200,000 business degree from there. And not graduate, undergraduate. Useless. I have, like everything they taught me there is helpful information if you want to be an employee. But everything I learned from that degree as a business owner and as someone who is responsible for basically the whole business, it was not useful at all. And when I tell people that, they're shocked. They're like, how could that possibly be? I'm like, I don't know. You talk to the people that designed the curriculum. It was not helpful. Right. If I wanted to go into finance or consulting, probably that would have been useful. But being an entrepreneur, in hindsight, it would have been a better use of my time to have the money.
business majors and MBAs, it's crazy to me because they charge so much money for it and they're taught by teachers, not business owners. Yep. Like it's wild. And so, I mean, that's a whole rather rabbit hole that about college not being worth it and everything, but it's just kind of like, you have to really carve your own path and really push, you know, stay consistent and push forward. Or otherwise it's not the way society is laid out and the expectations. It's not, there's no easy path to entrepreneurship. You have to forge that own path. A lot of gurus out there, they glorify the grind and hustle culture, you know, Gary Vee style, like you got to work like crazy. I don't care if you're 60 years old, you're still young, like all that kind of stuff. You promote the opposite with your whole, earn more and work less. Methodology. So why is that?
Yeah. So I'm just not interested in that lifestyle, to be honest. Like, that is not my idea of a good good outcome from work, right? Like, the whole point of having a business is to enable you to live your life, not to make it your entire life. And I think when people kind of espouse this hustle and grind lifestyle, what I've noticed from actually knowing a lot of people like that and talking to them is a lot of the hustle and grind people are not nearly as effective as they think they are. And they use it as a crutch to not be focused and to be able to chase every shiny new object that comes around. And when you actually, when the rubber meets the road and you see what these, like 20 hour or 12 hour day people are doing, it's a lot of fat, and a small percentage of things that are actually moving the needle. So I'm not interested in that. I personally think that if people knew about it, most people would be happier with a business like mine. Okay. So at every point I've really optimized for profit and freedom as opposed to revenue and scale. And what most people see, especially from the hustle and grind people, but honestly just conventional business advice in general, is it is geared towards building a large business. And what a large business looks like is you're scaling. So you have more employees, more clients, more office space, more work. And that's totally fine if that's what you want. But I've met a lot of people that have reached that promised land of 7-8 figures, and they realize that the prize, the reward for all of this work was that they built a business and a job that they don't like. And they dread going into work the same way that, we talked about dreading into going into your entry-level gig. So I don't know. I just think that I want to expose people to this idea that there is a middle ground in between having a job and aiming for the stars and the biggest business possible, because there are a lot of downsides that people don't understand when it comes to like building a big business.
I couldn't agree more. And that's exactly why I wanted to have you on the show, because I think there are just so many very loud voices in the business entrepreneurship space that are screaming that we should be working our ass off and that we should be hustling ourselves to death. And, I couldn't agree with you more that that is not the lifestyle that I have ever wanted to live. And, it's unfortunate when you see people find success in business ownership, but their success is literally just a new cage that they've put on themselves. Yeah. From the old cage that they escaped from with a 9-to-5. Now you are working twice as many hours and making about the same, or in many cases less than they were in their 9-to-5, but they have their AKA freedom. That's not really freedom anymore, right? If the goal, like I agree with you, my goal in having a business is so that I can live the life that I want to live. Like my purpose here on this planet, at least the way I feel, isn't to run a successful business. Successful business helps pay the bills and helps me do the things and support the lifestyle that I want to live, which is kind of like the purpose of for what being here, right? To be happy ultimately and to live a happy life. And money enables you to do more things that can hopefully allow you the time and space and freedom to find more happiness. Money in and of itself, if you don't then give yourself the time with that money, if you don't buy yourself the time with that money, you're not able to find more happiness. You're just stacking money, numbers on a screen in a bank account somewhere and still working yourself to death. So maybe that is a goal for some people. I think that also goes back to kind of societal pressures in the United States too, of we have to have this massive retirement savings or else you're never going to be able to pay your bills. Social Security won't be there. So I'm going to work myself to death until I'm 65 and then enjoy 65 to death with this nest egg, right? And so I would personally rather enjoy now until I die to a degree than really enjoy, or to like a medium degree than really enjoy 65 to death. Because am I going to want to travel? Am I going to want to do things? Am I going to want to have all those experiences at 65? No, my hip's going to hurt at 65. Right. Like, yep. You know what I mean? So I think finding that balance between having a successful business and also being able to buy back your time, which is the real ultimate goal with that business, is the key, not just stacking cash and working yourself to death. I mean, at least for me, I think a lot of people will resonate with that, but they may have to take a hard look at their own setup and be like, oh, wait a minute.
Do my actions actually reflect
correct
ideal, right?
Correct. And you're right on the whole shiny object thing. Like that, oh, I found, you know, this new software, this new CRM, this new VOIP call, you know, call software, this new whatever, let me install that and get all my team on that. And like, it's just a lot of stuff that doesn't move the needle forward at all. And they're spending their time on it because that, you know, they feel that they need to be putting that all that in. So when you zoom out, what are some actual strategies that agency owners can use to work less, but still earn more?
All right. Let's see if I can break this down for you. First thing I'll say is, usually when people ask me this or I explain, there's often a lot of confusion about like, how does my business even work? So they hear two things, right? They hear 500K, 10 hours a week. And most people, rightfully so, can't wrap their brain around, well, how do you even get there? What does that look like? It just sounds like magic, you know? So usually when I explain how to do it, the best way to explain it is to explain my business. And then you can start to think about, oh, well, I could apply this piece to my business. So to get to 500K a year, it's pretty simple. My company has a minimum rate of $60,000 a year. That is the absolute minimum that we will use to work with clients. That can be either spread out over 12 months as a retainer, or it can be a big project or some combination of the two. The beauty of this is that I really only need 5 to 7 clients per year in order to reach that goal. So it's a very attainable and manageable number. So my company is called Richard Media Company. It's a full service agency. Our kind of pitch to people is that we replace your $200,000 a year art director with our team for a fraction of the cost. What we do, design, development, video production, those are kind of main areas of creative. And then we also do a bit of comms and PR, just as kind of bonuses sprinkled on the side. In terms of the playbook that I followed to get to this point, it's actually pretty simple. The number one most important point that I think, if you want a lifestyle business or if you want a business that is not big for the sake of being big, number one lesson is scale your business by increasing price as opposed to increasing the amount of customers that you are serving. And over the last 5 years, that has really been the mantra for me, is how can I continue to raise my prices and obviously raise the value that I provide to clients commensurate with that. And we do that by both increasing the rate and how long we work with the clients. So for me, that means my ideal situation is just having a couple of clients, 5 to 7 each year, and ideally working with them for a long time. So I have some clients that have been with me for 3, 4, 5, 6 years, and we have a relationship. And you know, as a result, you get better results for your clients because you know their business like the back of your hand. And number two is you get the economies of scale that come with not having to onboard and get up to speed on new clients all the time and the churn and all that stuff. So number one is scale by increasing price as opposed to scaling by increasing the amount of customers that you have. And then number two is just have a few customers and try to work with them for as long as possible. All right, next step. Pick clients who can afford to pay you. This is a big mistake that people make, and they don't understand why they can't charge higher prices for their services or whatever it is that they're offering. It's because they're selecting clients that could not afford it, right? So for me, we have a minimum level of revenue that for our clients. So the same way that they're vetting us, we're vetting them. And we don't want them to be in a situation where, you know, they're spending 50% of their annual budget on our company. You know, I want to be like 1% of their annual budget. And that's a great place where, you know, you pick clients who can afford to pay you and that value what you're doing. And just, you know, it makes it much easier throughout the sales process. And believe it or not, there's less competition for these clients. Most people think, oh, all the good clients are really hard to get. But what I've found is that there's actually less companies competing for this pool of clients. And there are a ton of companies out there who are just like not working with anyone. All right. Number four, focus on doing the highest leverage tasks. So when people ask me, what do you do all day, Rich? You know, you work 10 hours a week. What the hell are those 10 hours? And the most important thing that I'll say is that of those 10 hours, real talk, they're all really important hours. They are high intensity, level 10, focused, high output work. One of the reasons I've been able to get to this point is because I've really trimmed all of the fat on anything else outside of just the high leverage tasks. So what I'm doing are sales, building client relationships and managing the client relationships. I'm doing strategy with the clients, high level design, and then building systems for my business to basically remove myself from other areas. So if I'm not doing one of those five things, I know I'm probably off task in my company. And it's taken me a long time to get to this point where I realized, like, hey, these are the areas where my value is 100 times, you know, the value of, let's give me an example, like filling out an invoice, right? Sure, I could sit there and do all the invoicing for my company, and that would probably take a couple hours a week, but that's just not a good use of my time. So really focusing on, like, where do you provide the most value and being ruthless about delegating or eliminating or automating everything else is another piece. All right, I'll give you the last two real quick, and then we can dive into wherever you want here. Number five, one of the ways that I've been able to work with a lot of clients is for a few years, I invested an insane amount of time upfront in building out a roster of talented freelancers to assist with the work. So the way that I'm really only able to do the highest high level strategy in design work is I have built a team of freelancers around me who are able to execute on everything else, to execute on the strategy and execute on the plan. So while it's my company, you know, on any given project, I have a handful of designers, developers, video editors, animators, et cetera, who are able to take the strategy and execute on it. And I think that's the other piece of the puzzle that most people never really get to, is they maybe try to delegate once or twice, and they they go out there, they find someone, it doesn't work out because they expect them to be them and they're not. And as a result, the conclusion that people come up with, they're like, oh, delegation doesn't work. And the life hack here is that I spent a bunch of time upfront interviewing hundreds of people, testing people out in order to get this bulletproof roster of people that I work with now. And as a result, even though that took work upfront, they can do most of the work. You know, and that's the beauty of it. And the final piece that I'll say is building systems to automate every part of your business. So I'm always asking myself, how can I remove myself from as many processes as possible within the business? So over the years, we've built out systems that run without me for referrals, fulfillment, retention, client communication, sales, all that stuff. And I always feel like my goal as the owner of the business is to spend as much time building systems as possible. So those are six points that hopefully if people can take one or two of those, it's going to move you in the right direction. But I think it helps to like paint a picture of, okay, now I kind of understand how you could have this business working just 10 hours a week. And it's real, you know, as opposed to like, oh, well, it must be magic, you know?
Yeah, no, it's definitely not magic. It's definitely more strategy. But you just opened up a whole can of worms. Now I have a ton of questions for
you. Pick any worm you want.
On some of these. Okay, so I love the first one, which is work with less amount of clients than trying to just, you know, get $2,500 a month clients. Because I think a lot of people fall into that trap where they, when they first start off as, you know, their own freelancer in their own freelancing business, they're undercharging for their services, and because they just want clients, they just want to get those initial first clients, which is fine, and it makes sense, and a lot of people do it, but they end up with four or five clients that are all charging them, you know, they're all paying about $1,500 a month. They can't really spend much more than that, and then they kind of continue on that path of quantity over quality, and then that kind of leads them in the wrong direction. So I think that's really good advice. I guess the main question on that would be, where do we then find these bigger clients, right?
Mythical big clients. Yeah.
Right. Because you said there's less competition for them, which I agree with you. There's definitely less competition for them because people, like, they think that they're already taken, you know, or they already have in-house teams for it or whatever, you know, preconceived notion people have. But I guess where would people focus their attention to go ahead and find these whale type clients?
Yeah, great question. So for me, the number one, and this is what most agency owners don't realize, is the effect of building relationships over years in a career compounds. And I'm at the point now where I turn away most of the work that comes in through referrals because it's just not a perfect fit for what I'm looking for. And when I trace back the vast majority of my clients, even today, 10 years later, I can trace the lineage of them through referrals all the way back to some of my first couple of clients that I ever worked with, years and years later. So while there are a million different ways to, you know, find good clients, my experience has been that for the big ones, it's more about relationships than it is about, you know, doing some kind of cold email strategy or whatever. I'm sure that stuff works. It's not been my experience. My experience has been that referrals and relationships are key. And the biggest mistake that I see people making is that they don't ask for referrals enough. And, you know, maybe you hear that advice a lot, ask for referrals more, but guess what? No one is doing it as much as they should. And the one story I always think of was a couple years into my business, I was doing like collaborative subcontract work with another design agency owner who was really successful. He's based in DC. And I was always asking myself the same question. I was like, how the hell does this guy always have clients knocking down his door? And like, how is he always busy and he's turning people away? And then I started going, with him to client meetings, and then I figured it out. He was shameless about asking for referrals every single time that he met with a client, to the point where it was like almost a joke, you know, like he would just sneak it in wherever. And what people don't realize is like, people want to help you. Your clients want to refer you to other people, but it's not their job to do it. And they're not going to be, just because you said one time, hey, if you know anyone else like me in the next 90 days, you know, send them my way. Just because you said that once doesn't mean that they're going to do it forever. People need to be reminded constantly. And then, you know, because you checked in with them once a month or, you know, once every couple of weeks or whatever, all of a sudden someone says, hey, I need a website. And then they're like, oh, you know what? You know, Rich just told me, you know, just checked in with me and he's great. I worked with him. So the number one advice that people don't want to hear is that referrals compound over time, but you can't really create that powerful compounding unless you're being much more, not aggressive, because it's, I don't think it's aggressive to ask for referrals, but
forward,
much more strategic about asking for them on a regular basis and building a system around it.
I love it. Yeah, no, that's probably something that I don't even do enough now that I'm thinking about it. You just get into your daily habits and everything. And a lot of our attention goes to new lead gen, you know, clients we've never spoken to before or thought about, but there's a lot of low hanging fruit, right, on your existing client base, asking them for referrals, right? And then there's even, you know, ways that you can incentivize them, right? Like a referral fee for anybody that's brought in, you know, that, and that could even go for your account managers too. If you have account managers, you could share a referral fee with them if they get their clients that they're account managing to bring in another client to you. So the client gets a referral fee, the account manager gets a referral fee, and you didn't spend any of your time on actually asking for that. Your account managers that have the relationship with them did. So there's a lot of ways you can do that, which I really, really love. So it is reducing your client base to clients that, you know, focusing on clients that can spend more money instead of, you know, clients that, you know, are smaller that, you know, you have to stack up and trying to constantly churn those out. And then where we're at in number two.
So yeah, number one is scale by increasing price. Number two is the few clients. And then the second piece of that is working with them for a long time. And in a lot of ways, this is just as important as only having a couple of clients is how do you structure the way that you work with them so that it makes sense for them to want to work with you on an ongoing basis. And part of that goes back to your strategy about like I'll give you an example, right? Like if the goal of your business is to, I don't know, create a website, well, one-time thing, or to do branding, right? A one-time thing. You're going to have to keep finding clients over and over and over again unless you have some structured thing that happens after the initial project. So often what I see is like people do run a project-based company where you do the project and it's done and they don't really need anything else afterward, as opposed to the way that we kind of structured the model from the beginning, where we're like, you're going to need work forever. We want to be those people that can provide it on an ongoing basis and be, you know, a creative partner with you. And that is really setting the frame that like, I want to work with you for years. And I tell this to clients, I'm like, listen, we're not the people that you come to for one project. You know, most of our clients have been with us for many years and that's what we want. And the beauty of this is it removes a ton of the work of just having to find new clients constantly. When I'm able to be selective and choosy about who I work with, it allows me to pick people that are a better fit and then everyone gets better results. Because on average at this point, like I might lose one client a year, you know, their contract ends and they don't renew. So I have 12 months to find one new client to replace them. And that's just a much easier way to live as opposed to this like feast or famine cycle that most agency owners have where it's like, oh my God, the clock is ticking constantly.
Yeah, they're constantly on this hamster wheel of churn and burn and trying to find the next one, you know, to replace them, especially if they're at that point where, you know, they're just making their bills or they've just replaced their 9-to-5 income. Losing just one client, now you're less than what your old 9-to-5 was and now you're struggling. So it's critical to have, you know, long lasting relationships. I also find that, you know, there's also benefit in like when you're bringing in a new client and not like you said, you like to work with them in 12 month cycles. And of course we like to work with our clients a long, you know, amount too, but getting them to trust you in the beginning, and giving them an out at any time, we found to be more beneficial because if you're confident in the work that you do, you can have a contract that lets them leave whenever they want to leave, but have the intention of working with them longer. So they come in easier with less stress, less pressure. They don't feel like they're signing their life away for 12 months, but they end up staying with you for much longer than 12 months because you do a really good job and you produce the quality. So there's like this balance between, you know, earning a little bit more trust on the front end and also, you know, finding that long-term client that's going to serve your agency for, you know, hopefully years.
Yeah, no, I love that. And it's funny, the game that we play for sure is the exclusivity game where I'm upfront with people. I'm like, listen, like I'm not taking on 10 new clients this year. I'm taking on one or two. And in a lot of ways, it's up to them too to decide whether they want to be that one and lock in for, you know, 12 months or whatever. So yeah. Our initial contract has to be $60,000 or more. We're not going to necessarily do a try us out for 1 month. I don't know if I want to get too into it, but one of the things that we will do is if we're kind of halfway in between is we'll do what I call a paid proposal, which is essentially like strategy and discovery and figuring out like, what is the actual problem here? Especially if it's a website project, sometimes they come to us and they want to, you know, figure out like how much is it going to cost to do this big web project. And some of the stuff we've done is pretty complex, you know, involving a lot of developers. And I'm like, listen, I can't give you a quote. I need to start the project before I can tell you how big it is and give you a quote. So in that instance, one of the things that we will do is we'll say, hey, pay us $5,000-$10,000. We'll put together a paid proposal, which is basically an audit where we start actually doing strategy and using our thinking. Because one of the big lessons that I've learned is that I never want to give away my thinking for free. I think it's the most valuable thing that I can provide to my clients. And so often, you know, in the in the rush to like try to get a sale and try to close them, you know, we give all the sauce away in the sales call. Yeah. And in a lot of ways that devalues everything that we do. Like, there's a reason why I'm expensive. And I upfront, I'm like, listen, like, I don't give away my thinking for free. It's what people pay for. So that nice medium can be that paid proposal where I can start to give them a taste of like, what am I thinking about for this project? What do I recommend? And then that gives them a point. And I say, listen, here's what we would charge to do this for you. You can take this, shop it around to other people. I don't really care. But this is what we recommend. And we think the best course of action is, or you can just go with us. And usually by that point, you know, the paid proposal is amazing. And they're like, no brainer. And we'll work with you.
I've definitely encountered that challenge too. Just with my own sales team, they will get people that are definitely just looking for free strategy and free stuff to copy themselves. And like, we can identify it really, really quickly. Like, the closer will come back to me and be like, well, they want to see specific ad examples for their specific business model written out. They want to see the copy, they want to see the images, and they want to see the funnel that you've built for a business exactly like theirs. And I'm like, okay, great. So they want all of our, you know, creative work that people paid a whole bunch of money for that to be delivered to them for free in order to trust us so that they can copy us and then go and try and do it on themselves. It's like, no, you have to find that line between protecting, you know, your actual creative work, which is like what you said, very, very valuable, and also building that trust in the sales process. And it's just very, very common out there that people try to get as much as they can for free on the sales call with zero intention to actually buy. And you kind of have to hold firm in that footing. I did want to ask you, but I mean, I would consider you probably an expert on this, but what are some ways that agency owners can be more productive with their time, right? So if you are someone listening that's spending 40-hour days on your business and you're not making, you know, what you want, or maybe you are, but you're still completely tapped out on your time, what are some easy ways that agency owners can, you know, work less and be more productive?
Ooh, easy is always a fun word. So, all right, the number one thing that I do, and I will give away some free thinking here, is when people, I don't really do one-on-one coaching anymore. I found that it's just more effective for me to provide more scaled information to a lot of people instead of one person. But when I was working with people one-on-one, the first thing that we do before anything else that I make them do is I make them sit down and do a time audit. And what that is basically tracking their time for a period of at least a week, maybe 2 weeks. And I encourage any agency owner, freelancer, solopreneur, blah, 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 to build this habit. This is the habit that has served me more than probably any other one in my business. I've been tracking my time daily for maybe 5 years now. Right now, I've been using this app called Toggle. It's called T-O-G-G-L. Toggle Track is their time tracking product. They have a couple of other products in their suite. But I think it's really, really useful. And what people find when they track their time is that what they think they do and what they actually do are completely different. So before anything else, if you do nothing else, you learn nothing else from me, track your time for a week and start to understand what you're actually doing. And what I'll notice generally is people's time kind of falls into three categories. Category number one is just wasted time. Some people are worse at this than others, but everyone does it. The amount of time where they sit at the desk saying, I'm working, and they're pretending to work, right? They're checking social media, they're watching a YouTube video, they're reading the news, they're getting distracted, they're getting interrupted. That's number one. Second thing are what I call maintenance tasks. And maintenance tasks are the tasks that you do in your business in order to maintain the current level of revenue and just keep the ship afloat. So it's just the day-to-day of running your business. And those tasks are going to be things like current client fulfillment, you know, sending out invoices, answering emails, you know, maybe you post content online. It's just all the things that you need to do to maintain the current baseline that you already are. And don't get me wrong, maintenance tasks have to happen. You know, businesses need to keep running. But your goal as the owner of your business is to transition to doing much more of the final type of tasks, which I call growth tasks. And growth tasks are going to be the things that you do that actually allow you to either one, increase the amount of money that you're making, or two, decrease the amount of hours that you're working. And when we do the time audits, what I find is that people spend only 5 to 10% of their time on a given week. And that's generous. Some people spend zero time. We'll do an entire time audit and they only maintained the entire week. They didn't do anything to move the ball forward and to grow. And your job as a business owner is to figure out how you can spend less time doing maintenance tasks and more time doing growth tasks. And as you can see for me, right, like I'm trying to spend as much time as possible doing these high leverage things. So the easy way, which isn't easy, is to track your time and actually figure out what you're doing and start spending your time on more growth tasks.
Yeah. Because if you're not tracking it, and you don't have any idea, you really don't know. If you asked, you know, someone how much of your time is spent on growth tasks, they would probably naturally say like 50% or more. Like they would just assume that they're doing everything they can. Well, of course, all of my time is dedicated to stuff that's going to move the business forward. But when you really look at it, you're like, you know, was that, you know, that hour over here sending back and forth emails on this task actually moving the business forward? Or could that have been something that one of your freelancer, you know, or white label team could have handled themselves, right? And oftentimes there's just so many things I think agency owners are doing themselves that could be delegated. And probably I would assume that you would consider delegating, like the actual task of figuring out who can do this for me and what, you know, what can be done that can be taken off of my calendar and put onto a member of my teams, that would be considered a growth task, right?
100%.
Instead of actually doing it.
Yeah. It's any time that you can do a task that will pay you back more hours. So if you can spend, you know, 10 hours doing something that's going to save you 10 hours every week for the rest of your life, that's a good use of your time as a business owner, right? So those are the types of things. So delegating, building systems, even the time that I had to invest upfront in building out that roster has paid me back times a million because it's removed me from the majority of fulfillment in my business.
Yeah. I think another thing, you know, this episode's going by so fast already. So I have to jump down a little bit, but one of the other things that I did want to talk to you about, because it's just so relevant right now in all media, but artificial intelligence, I think it's going to have a massive impact across, you know, every industry, including our own. But how do you see from a productivity standpoint, AI affecting, you know, the agency industry? I imagine probably see it positively in that it can help accelerate some of these things and offloading, and maybe not offloading it to a freelancer, but maybe to artificial intelligence. But I'm just curious on what your thoughts are on AI right now and how it could possibly help us in the future.
Yeah, it's a great question. It's one I get a lot, right? Because you're like, oh, you're the work less guy. What about AI? And as someone, I'm paying attention closely. I'll put it that way. I think AI is a tool. It's going to be an insanely powerful tool. And I think it's going to help to remove a lot of brute force tasks that are done across every industry, including and especially agencies. The one place where we have slotted it in is on SEO stuff. But I'm not the guy to talk about it. Okay. This is like be out of my scope. It's not my expertise.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what I will say is AI is going to make it cheaper to do the brute force stuff that's already happening across every industry. But if you want to continue to be competitive in an AI world, the value is created at the top, right? Strategy and systems are what people are going to pay for. And whether you're executing on that system with a robot or a person, that's going to be your company's bread and butter as things continue to change. And the one thing that I always say, and I'm saying I always say it, but I actually got it from someone else, is strategy is what people pay for. You know, the design and the fulfillment are the party favors. You know, it is the logical conclusion of, you know, why you hired me. And I don't think people really understand, especially when you're just starting out, how important the actual strategy and, you know, getting results for your clients are, as opposed to just like, you know, what does the design look like? It's really quite endemic in the design world specifically, because a lot of times design tends to be, designers will make the design process about them instead of about the client.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like their special magic piece of artwork. And the beauty of me is I didn't go to design school, so I don't have that hang up. That was not taught to me, and I don't consider myself an artist the way that many creatives do. And for better or for worse, that has helped me to make more money. So
yeah,
a bit of a tangent there, but I think AI is going to have an impact. I don't consider myself to be an expert, and you know, the only way to stay ahead of this is to, you know, lean into the human creativity that only humans can have.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really excited for it. I think, you know, there's a lot of little areas that it's going to help agency owners get ahead. And I think that, you know, leaning into it and, you know, using it in different areas, testing it in different areas, like you said, you're testing it in SEO, and just starting to get acclimated to it and not run from it, is going to, you know, hopefully enable us to keep ahead of the competition and people who aren't using it or aren't interested in it. The last question that I have for you is something that I ask everyone that comes on my show. What is your number one piece of advice for an agency owner that is just starting out today?
Nice. Yeah, I don't think it's a great question. And because I spent a little bit of time reflecting on my past journey prior to this, I'm remembering a little bit more. And it's weird because most people come to me and I'm not really like the 0 to 1 guy. You know, I'm not the person that you come to find your first client. I'm like the 1 to 10 or 10 to 100 person. Once you've built something and you realize it's not exactly what you want and you want to turn it into what you actually want. But the number one piece of advice that I would give to myself and to any person just starting out is that the biggest value that you can have is continuing to gain skills and to get better. And there is no way around it. When you start out, you are going to suck. And the path to getting good is to go through being bad. There is no way around it. You cannot skip it. You can accelerate it, but there's just a certain amount of reps that need to happen. And what you'll learn is the more you do this, the better you get, the faster you are at acquiring skills. But I really think that, you know, in the internet world where everyone wishes they can just go from like 0 to millionaire selling, especially like services, you have to be good at selling at providing the service that you sell. And that's my number one piece of advice, honestly. And just remember, look at me. You know, I made $10,000 in my first year in business. I could have made more money working at 7-Eleven, you know, and here now I have a great business, and that was a decade. So, you know, a year happens faster than you think, and a decade, you know, happens slow. Wait, switch it. Whatever. Just keep getting skills.
Yeah. Keep getting skills and stay consistent, I think, is a theme that we've drawn through this entire episode, is don't give up too early, that you can get there. You just have to keep at it. Rich Webster, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. There was a ton of insightful nuggets in this episode. I learned a lot. I know the audience did. So again, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, man, my pleasure.
That's going to be it for today's episode. If you're ready to take your agency to the next level and have your leads, your team, and your sales all done for you, then apply now at dfy-agency-program.com/scale. That's dfy-agency-program.com/scale. There will be a clickable link in the podcast show notes below. See you in the next episode of the Digital Marketing Agency Builders Podcast.